Okay. 36-year-old adult woman me knows that, I snapped. But those things don't look okay in the eyes of family court, and is that really the example I want to set for an 11-year-old?
I can see you've entered the overanalyzing everything part of your freakout, Steph quipped.
Stop being a jerk and start telling me what to do!
He reached out and squished my cheeks between his hands. Naomi, did it ever occur to you that maybe this is your chance to start living a life you choose? Start doing things you want to do?
No, I said.
The screen door burst open, and Waylay jumped out with Waylon on her heels.
I can't find my math book.
Where did you see it last? I asked her.
If I knew that, I'd know where it was.
The three of us headed in the direction of the cottage. Waylon darted out in front of us, pausing every few feet to sniff things and pee on them.
Does Knox know you have his dog? I asked.
Dunno, Waylay shrugged.
So are you and Knox a thing?
I stumbled over my own feet. Steph snickered unsympathetically next to me. I blew out a breath. Honestly, Way, I have no idea. I don't know what we are or what I want from him or what he wants from me, so we probably won't be a thing forever, but we might be spending more time with him for a while, if it's okay with you. She frowned thoughtfully at the ground as she kicked at a stone.
You mean, you wouldn't hang out with him and stuff if I didn't want you to?
Well, yeah. You're kind of pretty important to me, so your opinion matters.
Huh. Then I guess he can come over for dinner tonight if he wants to, she said.
Nash was home and resting in his freshly cleaned and restocked apartment. My parents were celebrating their weekly date night with dinner at a 5-star Lebanese restaurant in Canton. Liza had invited Steph to be her hot date for a dinner party at a local fancy-ass horse farm. As for me, I had a new, to me, SUV in my driveway, and my sort of boyfriend and niece were in the backyard building a fire in the fire pit while I put away the leftovers. Waylon was in the kitchen with me in case I dropped any of the aforementioned leftovers.
Fine, but don't think you can look at me with that droopy face and get a treat every time, I warned the dog as I reached into the mason jar of dog treats I hadn't been able to resist at Nina's dad's pet shop.
Waylon wolfed down his biscuit with an appreciative full butt wiggle.
Ouch! Damn it! Waylay! Language! I yelled.
Sorry, she called back.
Busted,
Knox sang, not quite quietly enough.
Knox!
Sorry.
I shook my head. What are we going to do with them? I asked Waylon. The dog belched and wagged his tail. Outside, Waylay gave a triumphant whoop, and Knox punched both fists in the air as sparks became flames. They high-fived. I snapped a picture of them celebrating and sent it to Steph.
Me. Spending the evening with two pyromaniacs, how's your night going?
He responded less than a minute later with a close-up of a dignified-looking horse.
Steph.
I think I'm in love. How sexy would I be as a horse farmer?
Me. The sexiest. Aunt Naomi!
Waylay burst through the screen door as I wiped down the countertops.
We got the fire started. We're ready for s'mores.
She had dirt on her face and grass stains on her t-shirt, but she looked like a happy 11-year-old.
Then I guess we'd better get them started.
With a flourish, I pulled the dish towel off the s'mores platter I'd assembled.
Whoa!
Let's go, ladies,
Knox called from outside.
You heard the man, I said, nudging her toward the door. He makes you smile.
What?
Knox, he makes you smile, a lot. And he looks at you like he likes you a lot.
I felt my cheeks flush.
Oh, yeah?
She nodded.
Yeah, it's cool.
We ate too many s'mores and sat around the campfire until dark. I expected Knox to make an excuse to head home, but he followed us inside and helped me clean up while Waylay and Waylon went upstairs to brush her teeth.
I think my dog is in love with your niece,
Knox observed. He pulled an open bottle of wine and a beer out of the fridge.
There's definitely a crush happening, I agreed.
He pulled out a wine glass, filled it, and handed it to me.
Okay, maybe there were two crushes happening.
Thanks for dinner,
he said, opening his beer and leaning back against the counter.
Thanks for haranguing the sales guy into submission, I said.
It's a good vehicle,
he said, hooking his fingers in the waist of my shorts and drawing me closer. We'd spent the majority of the day together, but without touching. It had been a special kind of torture to be so close to a man who made me feel so much I forgot to think, yet not be able to reach out and touch him. He smelled like smoke and chocolate, my new favorite scent. I couldn't help it. I wanted to taste him. So I did. Bringing my mouth to his, I sampled his flavor, leisurely, deliberately. His free hand came around me, splaying over my low back, holding me to him. I breathed him in, letting his heat take the chill off my skin.
Suddenly, there was thunder on the stairs as both Waylay and the dog charged down.
Damn it, Knox muttered.
I jumped back and picked up my wine. Can we watch TV before bed? Waylay asked. Sure, I'll just say goodnight to Knox.
I was giving him his out. The man had to be exhausted, and I was sure he had better things to do than watch YouTube episodes of teen girls doing makeup with us.
I'm up for some TV,
he said, sauntering into the living room with his beer.
Waylay launched herself at the couch, curling into her favorite corner. The dog hopped up next to her. Knox took the opposite end and patted the cushion next to him. So I sat down with my niece, my sort of boyfriend, and his dog, and we watched a 15-year-old with 2 million subscribers tell us how to choose the right eyeliner for our eye color.
Knox's arm was warm and comforting behind me on the back of the couch. 5 minutes into the episode, I heard a soft snore. Knox had his feet propped up on the coffee table and his head pitched back against the cushion. His eyes were closed and his mouth was open. I looked at Waylay and she grinned at me. Knox snored again and we both giggled quietly. 31. Shifty in the Stacks. Naomi. The first week of September steamed into town with summer humidity and the first hint of changing leaves. After a few days of smothering attention, Nash insisted he was well enough for desk duty and returned to work a few hours a day. The dreadful Mrs. Felch had abruptly announced her retirement and moved to South Carolina to live with her sister. Waylay had a crush on her new teacher, Mr. Michaels, and she'd joined the soccer team. We'd survived our first official interview with the caseworker, and while my niece had made it known she wasn't a fan of the vegetables I was forcing on her, Ms. Suarez had scheduled the home study, which I took as a hopeful sign. When I wasn't cheering from the sidelines or sleeping with Knox or absorbing parenting books, I was working. I'd started my new job at the library and was loving it. Between honky-tonk and the community outreach desk at the library, I felt like I was actually starting to find a groove that was all mine, especially since most of the town had finally stopped calling me not Tina.
Naomi, God, I'm so sorry. I miss you. Things aren't right here without you. I had no right to take my stress out on you. I was just trying to provide the best life for you. If we would have waited like I'd wanted to, none of this would have happened. Love, Warner.
I exited out of my email inbox with an efficient click and a quiet groan. Warner again?
Steph looked up from his laptop.
The library was near empty today, and my best friend had commandeered the table next to the community outreach desk.
Yes, Warner again, I said.
I told you to stop opening them, Steph said.
I know. I'm only opening every other one. Progress, right? You're getting naked with the Viking. You don't need to be opening another man's whiny, passive-aggressive, why aren't you here to do my laundry emails?
I winced and looked around to make sure there weren't any eavesdropping patrons. Part of me likes seeing him grovel, even passive-aggressively.
Fair, he mused.
And another more logical part of me realizes that none of this actually matters. The relationship I had with Warner was no more real than the one I'm pretending to have with Knox.
Speaking of, you two sure are pretending a lot.
I know the score, I assured him.
Which is more than I can say for when I was with Warner.
I didn't get that Warner didn't really want to be with me. Knox has been nothing but transparent with his intentions.
Steph leaned back in his chair to study me.
What? I asked, checking to make sure I didn't have breakfast crumbs on my sweater.
A woman as gorgeous, smart, and entertaining as you shouldn't have so many half-assed non-relationships. I'm starting to think the common denominator is you, Witty.
I stuck my tongue out at him. Real nice, bestie.
I'm serious. I pegged Knox and his baggage within 30 seconds of meeting him. But you carry yours closer. Like it's in an emotional fanny pack.
You would never let me wear a fanny pack, emotional or not, I teased. When are we going to talk about the fact you still haven't asked Jeremiah for his number?
Never. Besides, he hasn't asked for mine either.
The elevator doors opened and Sloane emerged, pushing a book cart.
How's it going up here?
Today's non-librarian-like outfit was slim jeans that ended above the ankles, suede peep-toe booties, and a black sweater with heart-shaped elbow patches. The frames of her glasses were red to match the hearts.
Not bad. Steph here just accused me of carrying baggage in an emotional fanny pack, and I got Agatha and Blaze an appointment with the pro bono elder law attorney so they can talk about long-term care options for Agatha's dad, I said.
Sloane draped herself over the cart and rested her chin in her hands.
First of all, great work with our favorite biker babes. Secondly, Steph, with the never-ending witticisms, please tell me you have a straight brother, first cousin, or old nephew. I'm not picky.
Steph grinned.
Ah, but you are.
She wrinkled her nose.
Never mind. It's only fun when you pick on Naomi.
You know what they say, he said.
Yeah, yeah. If you can't stand the heat, stay off the second floor of the library.
With that, she disappeared into the stacks with the cart. A few minutes later, Steph headed out to take a conference call regarding one of his mysterious business deals, while I helped burly biker Wraith get an appointment with the closest Social Security office and sent out an email to library patrons about October's book or treat events. I was just finishing up taking notes on the chapter on puberty in my latest parenting book when someone cleared their throat.
Excuse me. I was wondering if you could help me.
He had hard green eyes and short, spiky red hair. Tattoos peeked out on the back of his hands from the sleeves of his white button-down. He had a sheepish smile, an expensive-looking watch, and a gold chain around his neck. There was something strange about the way he was looking at me. Not that it was unusual. Anyone who had had the misfortune of meeting Tina generally needed a while to adjust to the whole twin thing.
How can I help?
I asked with a smile. He tapped the closed laptop under his arm.
I'm looking for someone who can do a little light tech support. This darn thing stopped recognizing my wireless mouse and reading flash drives. Know anyone who can help?
His eye contact was intense, and it made me a little uncomfortable.
Well, it definitely wouldn't be me, I joked with a forced laugh.
Me either. My wife's usually my go-to for stuff like this, but she's on a business trip and I can't wait until she gets back,
he explained.
I just need someone to help me out. They don't have to be a professional or anything. I'd even be willing to pay a kid.
Something was off. Maybe I was just hungry, or maybe my code red was coming up. Or maybe this guy stomped litters of kittens for a hobby and my kinship guardian intuition was reacting.
The only person I knew who fit the bill was Waylay, and I wasn't about to let someone who gave me the heebie-jeebies anywhere near her. I flashed him a smile a few degrees warmer than perfunctory.
Gosh, you know what? I'm new in town, and I'm just getting my bearings. I don't know anyone off the top of my head, but if you give me a phone number or email, I'll reach out as soon as I find a resource.
His index and middle fingers on his left hand drummed lightly on the lid of his laptop. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. For some reason, I found myself holding my breath.
You know what? That'd be great, he said with a warm grin. Got a pen?
Relieved, I pushed a knock-em-out public library notepad across the desk to him and held out a pen.
Here you go.
Our fingers brushed when he took it, and he held my gaze for a beat too long. Then he smiled again and bent to scrawl a number on the pad.
Name's Flint, he said, tapping the pen over his name for emphasis.
His eyes skimmed over my name tag.
Naomi.
I did not like the way he said my name as if he knew me, as if he were already intimately familiar with me.
I'm sure I'll be able to find someone to help, I croaked.
He nodded.
Great. Sooner the better.
Flint picked up the laptop and gave me a once-over. He tossed me a salute.
Later, Naomi.
Goodbye.
I watched him stroll to the stairs. It took me an entire minute to figure out what was bothering me. It was his hands, specifically his left hand, which hadn't sported a wedding ring. I was just being paranoid. Maybe it was a sign that I was getting better at this guardian thing. I brushed the encounter aside and headed into my tiny office to load local IT support to the running list of questions I had for Sloan. The woman might have been pixie-sized, but she certainly had big ideas about how to expand the library's services to the community. It was both exciting and interesting to be part of something that was so focused on helping people. A shadow in my doorway caught my eye. I jumped and slapped a hand to my chest.
Crap on a cracker, Knox! You scared the hell out of me!
He leaned against the door jamb and quirked an eyebrow.
Baby, I don't want to tell you how to do your job or anything, but aren't you supposed to not yell in a library?
32. Lunch and a warning. Knox. I had things to do. Businesses to run, employees to yell at. But I wasn't thinking about all that. I was thinking about her. And here I was in the library, ignoring everything else because I woke up thinking about her and wanted to see her. I'd spent a lot of time thinking about Naomi Witt since she blew into town. I was surprised that it only got worse the more time I spent with her. She looked entirely too pretty today. Standing there behind her desk, lost in some mental to-do list, wearing a curve-hugging sweater in a ridiculously female pink. "What are you doing here?" she asked, her surprise turning to happiness. She closed the distance between us, stopping just shy of touching me. I liked how she was always leaning toward me, into me, like her body wanted to be as close to mine as possible at all times. It didn't feel clingy like I'd always thought it would. It felt not terrible. Thought I'd take you to lunch. Really? She looked thrilled at the invitation, and I decided I didn't mind that either. Having a woman like Naomi look at me like I was the hero of her day felt damn good. No, Daisy, I just showed up here to mess with you. Yes, really. Well, I am hungry. Those plush lips painted a deep pink, curved in an invitation I wasn't going to ignore. I was hungry for something other than food. Good, let's go. How long's your break?
I get an hour.
Thank fucking God. A minute later, we were walking out of the library and into the September sun. I steered her toward my pickup with a hand on her lower back. So what fine dining establishment will we be patronizing today? she asked when I slid behind the wheel. I reached into the back seat and dropped a paper bag in her lap. She opened it and peered inside. It's peanut butter and jelly, I explained.
You made me a sandwich.
There's chips in there, too, I said defensively. And that tea you like.
Okay, I'm trying not to be charmed by the fact that you packed me a picnic lunch.
It's not a picnic, I said, turning the key.
Where are we going to eat our not picnic lunch?
Third base, if you're up for it. She squeezed her knees together and squirmed a little in her seat. Her lower lip snagged between her teeth.
What about the horn? She asked.
I brought a blanket.
A blanket and a packed lunch. Definitely not a picnic, she teased.
She wouldn't be so smug when I had my hand down those tight little pants she was wearing. We could just go back and eat in the break room at the library, I threatened. She reached over and gripped my thigh.
Knox?
The seriousness in her tone had my guard going up.
What? This doesn't feel like we're pretending.
I thumped my head against the back of the seat. I'd known this conversation would be coming, and I still didn't want to have it. As far as I was concerned, we'd both stopped pretending almost as soon as we started. When I touched her, it was because I wanted to, not because I wanted someone to see me doing it. Do we have to do this, Daisy, when you've got a meter running on your lunch break? She looked down at her lap.
No, of course not.
I gritted my teeth. Yes, we do. If it's something you want to talk about, then talk about it. Stop worrying about pissing me off because we both know it's bound to happen. Her gaze lifted to mine.
I was just wondering what we're doing.
I don't know what we're doing. What I'm doing is enjoying spending time with you without worrying about what comes next or what happens in a month or a year. What are you doing?
Besides enjoying spending time with you?
Yeah. Those pretty hazel eyes returned to her lap.
I'm worrying about what comes next, she confessed.
I nudged her chin up so she'd look at me. Why does there have to be something that comes next? Why can't we both just enjoy this the way it is without worrying ourselves to death over something that hasn't happened yet?
That's just usually the way I operate, she said.
How about we try this my way for the next while? My way gets you a non-picnic lunch and at least one orgasm before 1 p.m. Her cheeks went pink, and while her smile wasn't as big as the one I'd gotten earlier for surprising her, it was good enough.
Let's go,
she said. I went instantly hard. All the thoughts I'd had of spreading her out on a blanket, naked and whimpering my name, rushed back. I wanted to taste her outside in the sun, the warm breeze, wanted to feel her move under me while the rest of the world stood still. I threw the truck in reverse and hit the gas. We made it a block before Naomi's phone rang from the depths of her purse. She dug it out and frowned at the screen.
It's Nash.
I snatched the phone from her and answered the call.
Knox!
She complained.
What?
I snapped into the phone.
Need to talk to Naomi,
Nash said. He sounded grim. She's busy. Talk to me.
I tried, asshole. I called you first and you didn't pick up. Got some news about Tina.
There went my fucking picnic. As I admired the view of Naomi's shapely ass in front of me, I wondered how my brother was dealing with the long flight of stairs with his injuries. Nash's place was on the second floor above Whiskey Clipper, and when I'd brought him home the previous weekend, he only made it to the top after I threatened to pick him up and carry him. He opened the door just as I raised my fist to knock. He looked pale, tired, and the asshole had his shirt off, revealing his wound dressing. He was holding fresh gauze and a roll of tape.
"You poor thing,"
Naomi crooned, grabbing the supplies out of his hands.
"Let me help you."
Nash shot me a smirk when Florence Nightingale pushed her way inside. If he kept up the wounded hero routine with Naomi, I was going to raise his damn rent and push him down the stairs. This better be good, I warned him, following her inside. The apartment had high ceilings, exposed brick, and tall arched windows overlooking Main Street. There were two bedrooms, a bathroom I'd personally gutted, and an open concept living space with a small but kick-ass kitchen. His dining room table was covered in paperwork and what looked like case files. He clearly had trouble following doctor's orders. Morgan men didn't care to be told what to do. Sit, Naomi said, pulling out a stool from the kitchen island. He eased himself down on it, his jaw tight, as if just that movement hurt. You taking your pain meds? I asked. I'd strong-armed him into filling the prescription, but the bottle was still sitting next to the sink where I'd left it. My brother met my gaze. Nope. I knew why. Because one generation had the potential to poison the next. It was something we both lived with. It's not pretty, Naomi, Nash warned as she headed to the sink to wash her hands. Wounds never are. That's what first aid is for. She dried her hands and gave me a sunny smile as she returned to his side. You're not going to faint, are you? I asked her. She stuck her tongue out at me. I'll have you know I have extensive first aid training. Nash met my gaze as Naomi gently peeled the tape from his shoulder. A few years ago, I came across the scene of a car accident. It was late at night, raining. A deer had run out in front of the driver and he swerved to miss it. He hit a tree head on. There was blood everywhere. He was in so much pain, and all I could do was dial 911 and hold his hand. I'd never felt more helpless in my entire life, she explained. She'd hate that, I realized. The woman who lived her entire life to make others safe and happy would have hated feeling helpless when someone was in pain. So you took a class, Nash guessed as she eased the gauze away from the wound. I saw the clench in his jaw, caught the tightness in his tone. She hissed out a breath, and I looked up. Nash's shoulder was bare. It wasn't a nice, neat hole. It was a chasm of angry tissue, black stitches, and the rust of dried blood. I took 3 classes, Naomi said. A memory surfaced. Nash on his back on the playground, fresh blood flowing from his nose as Chris Turkowski sat on his chest and pummeled fists into my brother's face. Chris had fared worse than Nash that day. I'd gotten suspended for 2 days. A consequence both my dad and I felt was worth it. Family takes care of family, he'd said. At the time, he'd meant it. I couldn't stop staring at my brother's wounds as blood pounded inside my head. Knox? Naomi's voice was closer now. I felt hands on my shoulders and realized Naomi was standing in front of me. You want to sit down for a minute, Viking? I don't think I can handle 2 patients at once. Realizing she thought I was going to faint, I opened my mouth to clear up the misconception and explained that it was manly rage, not wobbly knees. But I changed my mind and went with it when I realized her concern for me had trumped Nash's bullet holes. I let her push me down into one of the leather armchairs in the living room. You okay? She asked, leaning down to look me in the eye. Better now, I said. Over her shoulder, my brother flipped me the bird. She brushed a kiss to my forehead. Stay here. I'll get you a glass of water in a minute, okay? Nash coughed something that sounded suspiciously like Faker, but the cough ended in a groan of pain. Served him right. I returned the one-fingered salute when Naomi rushed back to his side. Never saw you go weak in the knees at the sight of blood before, Nash observed. You want to get to your point, or is this how you wrangle social calls since no one wants to be around your ass? Naomi shot me a behave-yourself look as she opened a fresh strip of gauze. I saw my brother's jaw go tight when she pressed it to his wound. I looked away until Nash cleared his throat. Got some news on Tina, he said. Naomi froze, holding a strip of tape. Is she okay? Her twin sister had stolen from her, abandoned her child, and Naomi's first question was whether or not Tina was okay. The woman needed to learn that some ties needed cutting. We don't know her whereabouts, but it seems like there's something in town that she didn't want to leave behind. We found her prints at the storage unit break-in. I tensed, remembering the conversation in his hospital room. What storage unit break-in? Naomi asked as she moved on to the wound lower on his torso. The trailer park landlord reported two separate break-ins, one at his office and one at his storage unit where he keeps anything of value that tenants leave behind. The storage unit was a smash and grab. The lock was jimmied. Shit was broken. A bunch of stuff was missing. We found Tina's prints all over the place. I forgot about my fake fainting spell and got out of the chair. It's a small fucking town, I pointed out, crossing to the kitchen. How the hell is she sneaking around without anyone spotting her? Got a theory on that? We got some footage from a security camera at the entrance, Nash said, using his good arm to pull a file folder closer to him. He tipped it open, and a grainy photo showed a woman with long dark hair dressed in a long dress. Naomi leaned across my brother to peer at the photo. I wasn't certain, but I thought Nash looked like he was sniffing her hair. I dragged her into my side, away from my brother, and handed her the photo. What the fuck? I mouthed at Nash. He shrugged, then winced. Stubborn fucking idiot, I muttered. I guided Naomi to a stool out of Nash's reach, then stomped over to the sink. He still kept his over-the-counter shit and his excessive collection of supplements in the cabinet. I grabbed a bottle of Tylenol and poured a glass of tap water, then slid both across the counter to my dumbass brother. I spotted a baking dish on the counter with some kind of dessert in it. Lifting the plastic wrap, I sniffed. Peach cobbler. Nice. Since I was missing out on my own lunch and Nash was to blame, I grabbed a fork. That's my dress, Naomi said, handing the photo back to Nash. She'd gone pale. I snatched it out of his hand and stared at the image. Fuck, it was her dress. Figured she was dressing like you in case she ran into anyone in town, Nash explained. She must have grabbed it when she broke into your motel room. Naomi was biting her lip again. What's wrong? I demanded. She shook her head. Nothing. My bullshit detector was activated. Daisy. It's just, Tina used to do that when we were kids. I was homesick once our sophomore year of high school. She went to school dressed like me and told my history teacher, who I had a crush on, to go fuck himself. I got detention. All because my parents gave me the car the weekend before because she was grounded. Christ. You better not have kept your mouth shut and sat through detention, I snapped, throwing the fork in the baking dish in disgust. Did she get whatever it was she wanted? Naomi asked Nash. We don't know. I heard that Tina got herself hooked up with some new guy a few weeks back. Lucian did a little digging. Said the new guy was some badass out of D.C., and Tina bragged to a couple of friends that they had a big score coming up. Is that my mom's peach cobbler? She asked, nodding at the dish I held. She stopped by this morning to drop it off. She also stole my laundry and watered my plants. Naomi gave him a wobbly smile. Welcome to the family. Prepare to be smothered. Something was wrong, and she was trying to hide it. I put down the cobbler and picked up the picture again. Fuck. What? Nash asked. I saw you in this dress, outside the shop, I said, remembering her standing in the window of Whiskey Clipper with Liza and Waylay. She'd look like a summer vision in the dress. Her cheeks weren't pale now. They were flushed. Which means Tina didn't take this from the motel. She broke into the cottage. Naomi busied herself by organizing the first aid supplies. Nash swore and rubbed his good hand over his face. I need to call Grave. He got up and snatched his phone off the dining table. Yeah, Grave, he said. We've got a new problem. I waited until he headed into his bedroom before turning my attention back to Naomi. She broke into your place, and you weren't going to say a word. She looked up as I rounded the island. She held up her hands, but I kept coming until her palms were pressed against my chest. You do not keep shit like that from me, Naomi. You owe her nothing. You can't live your whole life protecting people who don't fucking deserve it, not when it puts your safety at risk. She winced, and I realized I was yelling. What are you thinking? You have way. If Tina and some low-life criminal fuck buddy are breaking into your fucking house, you don't cover that shit up. You don't protect the bad guy. You protect the kid. She shoved me, but I didn't budge. You saw my motel room. You heard what Nash said. The storage unit was trashed. That's what my sister does. She destroys. Naomi snapped. If Tina broke into the cottage, she would have wrecked the place. She never could stand the idea of me having anything nicer than what she did. So yeah, maybe I noticed a few things out of place once or twice, and I chalked it up to Waylay, or you, or Liza. But Tina didn't break in. What are you saying? She wet her lips. What if someone let her in? Someone meaning Waylay? Naomi shot a nervous glance in Nash's direction. What if Tina got word to her that she needed access and Waylay left a door unlocked? You were the one who yelled at me for leaving the back door unlocked, or what if Tina told her what she needed and Waylay got it for her? You think that kid would give Tina the time of day after she's had a few weeks with you? With your parents? Hell, even fucking Steph and Liza. You made one big happy family for her. Why would she risk fucking that up? Tina is her mother, Naomi insisted. Family doesn't stop being family just because one of you does shitty things. That's exactly what happens to families, and you need to quit this loyalty to your fucking sister. She doesn't deserve it. It's not loyalty to Tina, you idiot! Naomi shouted back. She shoved against my chest again, but I was immovable. Educate me, I insisted. If Waylay had anything to do with letting Tina in, how is that going to look in the guardianship hearing? How am I fit to take custody when I can't even keep criminals out of my house? They'll take her away from me. All have let her down. All have let my parents down. Waylay will end up with strangers. Her voice hitched. I grabbed her and pulled her into me. Baby, stop.
I tried,
she said, fingers curling into my t-shirt. Tried what?
I tried not to hate Tina. My whole life I tried so hard not to hate her.
I cupped the back of her head and buried her face in my neck. Don't fucking cry, Daze. Not over her. You've given her enough. She sucked in a breath and blew it out. You can use me as a pillow if you want to scream out, I offered.
Don't be sweet and funny right now.
Baby, those are two things no one has ever accused me of being. She pulled back and took another steadying breath.
This is not what I was expecting when you said you were taking me to lunch.
I expected the yelling, just thought we'd be doing it naked. We good? Her fingers were tracing little circles against my chest.
We're good, for now. I'm going to go collect myself in the bathroom.
I'm going to eat some more of your mom's cobbler. She gave me another one of those wobbly smiles that made me feel things I didn't want to feel. I reached out and tucked her hair behind her ear. It's going to be fine. No one's taken away. Nash and I'll take care of it. She nuzzled her cheek against my hand.
You can't solve my problems for me.
Oh, but you can solve everyone else's, I pointed out. You got to stop worrying about making everything okay for everyone else and start thinking about making it okay for you. She didn't say anything, but I felt like my words had landed. I gave her a playful slap on the ass. Go on. Go scream into some hand towels. A minute later, Nash came out of the bedroom. Grave is sending some boys out to see if we can lift any prints. Where's Naomi? Bathroom. You find any prints in the landlord's office? I asked Nash. He shook his head. It was a clean job. What are the odds they split up? Tina took the storage unit and the boyfriend took the office. Nash thought about it.
It plays?
Naomi doesn't think Tina broke in. She's worried Wade let Tina in, worried how that'll play in the guardianship shit. Nash blew out a breath.
Any judge that looks at those two sisters and decides Naomi isn't fit has the robe on too tight.
She's a worrier, which is why I don't want her worrying about some stranger sneaking into her home and going through her things.
Better the devil you know, he said.
I nodded.
Speaking of, you going to see him this weekend?
Nash asked. Deliberately, I took another forkful of cobbler, even though my appetite was suddenly gone. If he's there.
Give him this from me.
Nash limped over to the table and picked up a backpack.
And maybe think about not handing over cash.
You're lucky I'm tired of fighting about this, I told him, and took the bag.
People keep telling me how lucky I am, he said.
You're still here, aren't you?
You remember what she was wearing when she walked by your window,
he said, nodding at the bathroom door. Yeah, so?
She means something to you.
Does blood loss make you stupid? I wondered.
I'm just saying, you care about her. Any other woman you wouldn't have bothered calling her on her own bullshit. You wouldn't have known any other woman well enough to know she was bullshitting you, let alone care that she was.
Getting to your point anytime soon?
Yeah. Don't fuck it up like you usually do.
33. A swift kick. Naomi.
Why do kids' sports start at such ungodly hours? And why is the grass so wet? Look at these shoes. They'll never recover.
Steph complained as we set up our folding chairs on the sideline of the soccer field.
It's 9 a.m, not 4 a.m., I said dryly.
Maybe if you and Liza hadn't made and then drank an entire pitcher of margaritas last night, you wouldn't be cringing like a vampire at the light of day.
He collapsed into his chair, looking impossibly stylish in Ray-Bans and a thick knit sweater.
It was my last night in town before my trip to Paris. I couldn't say no to margaritas. Besides, it's easy to be Susie Sunshine when you're getting laid regularly.
Zip it, Betty Big Mouth, I said, shooting a look at the rest of Waylay's cheering section.
My parents were sitting with Liza, who didn't seem any worse for the wear for her half of the margaritas. Mom was doing her mom thing and introducing herself to everyone in a 20-foot radius, asking them the names of their players, and proudly pointing out Waylay in her number 6 jersey. Wraith, badass biker and silver fox, strode down the sideline. He was wearing a Metallica t-shirt, black jeans, and a scowl perfectly framed by his gray Fu Manchu mustache.
Looking lovely as always, Liza, he said with a wolfish smile.
Peddle that charm someplace else, biker boy, she shot back.
But I noticed 2 dots of color on her cheeks.
Bring it in, knock-em-outs, Wraith bellowed.
15 girls in all shapes, sizes, and colors jogged and skipped their way over to the unlikely head coach.
That guy looks like a probation violation, not a girls' soccer coach, Steph observed.
That's Wraith. His granddaughter Delilah is the one with the pigtails. She plays forward. She's unbelievably fast, I told him. Waylay looked up from her team huddle and waved at me. I grinned and waved back. The ref blew 2 short blasts on the whistle, and 2 girls from each team jogged to the center circle.
What's happening? Did the game start?
Steph asked. They're doing the coin toss. You're lucky you're so pretty. What if your future husband is into sports?
Steph shuddered.
Perish the thought.
The coin toss determines which team gets the ball for kickoff and which direction they're trying to score.
Look at you, soccer mom, he teased.
Self-consciously, I straightened my knock-em-out hoodie. Thanks to a school fundraiser, I now owned a capsule wardrobe of school cheer gear. The mascot was an oversized boxing glove named Punchy that I found both charming and inappropriate.
I may have done a little reading up on the sport, I said.
I'd done a lot of research. I'd reread Rock Bottom Girl and watched Ted Lasso, Bend It Like Beckham, and She's the Man for good measure. The whistle on the field signaled the start of the game, and I cheered along with the rest of the crowd as the action got underway. 2 minutes into play, I was holding my breath and Steph's hand in a death grip as Waylay got the ball and started dribbling for the goal.
"Go, Waylay, go!" Dad shouted as he came out of his chair.
When we were 10 years old, Tina had played softball for one season. Dad had been her biggest fan. It was nice to see he hadn't lost his enthusiasm. Waylay faked a move to the right before heading in the opposite direction around the defender and firing off a pass to Chloe, Sloane's niece.
"That was good, right?" Steph asked.
"It looked good. Sneaky and full of deception."
"The coach says she's a natural," I said proudly before yelling, "Go, Chloe!" Chloe lost the ball out of bounds and play was paused so three players could tie their shoelaces.
"A natural. That's impressive."
"She's quick. She's sneaky. She's a team player. There's just one or two little kinks that need working out."
"What kind of kinks?" Steph asked.
"What did I miss?"
Sloane appeared next to me in jeans and a Nirvana tank top under a soft gray cardigan. She had her pink and blonde hair piled high in a knot on top of her head and stylish sunglasses. Her lips were painted ruby red. She waved to Chloe and plopped down in her own camp chair.
"Just the first 2 minutes, no score. And Wraith hasn't screamed, 'Come on, ladies,' yet," I reported.
On cue, the burly biker cupped his hands to his mouth and shouted, "Come on, ladies!"
"And all was right with the world," Sloane said with a satisfied smile. "Any yellow cards for Way yet?"
I shook my head. "Not yet."
Though if the past two games were accurate predictors, it was only a matter of time.
"Is that like an award?" Steph asked.
"Not exactly," she said, winking at me before turning back to my best friend. "You're looking annoyingly gorgeous today."
He preened, fluffing the collar of his sweater.
"Why, thank you, sexy librarian. Love those boots."
She kicked up her feet to admire the knee-high waterproof footwear.
"Thanks. I discovered early on in Chloe's soccer career that I wasn't a fan of wet shoes and squishy socks."
"Now she tells me," he complained.
"By the way, loving this whole curly vibe," Sloane said, waving her hand in front of my face. I tossed my hair dramatically. "Thanks. Waylay showed me a tutorial."
"We're the new generation of hot soccer moms," Steph decided.
"I'll drink to that," Sloane agreed, hoisting her tumbler that said this is definitely not wine.
"So where's your hot soccer daddy?" Steph asked me.
"Thank God someone asked," Sloane said, shifting in her chair. "Here are all the questions I've stored up. How good is the sex? Is he as grumpy immediately after orgasm as he is the rest of the time, or are there cracks in the stony facade that reveal the soft teddy bear heart beating underneath?"
"Has he torn any clothing off your body?" Steph asked. "If so, I know a guy who makes entire wardrobes with Velcro closures."
"Of course you do," I said dryly.
Sloane leaned forward.
"Is he a flowers and a cook-you-dinner kind of guy? Or is he more of a growl at any man who dares to look at your boobs, dude?"
"Definitely a growler," Steph decided.
"You guys, my parents and his grandmother are right there," I hissed. "Besides, we're at a children's soccer game."
"She's going to tell us how inappropriate we're being, but what she doesn't realize is how every conversation happening around this field is about sex," he complained.
"They are not," I insisted. "Oh, believe me, they are. Chloe's been playing since she was 6. Those dads over there might look like they're talking about power tools and lawnmowers, but they're actually talking about vasectomies,"
Sloane said, pointing at a group of dads huddled together next to the bleachers.
"I forget. Did you tell us why Knox isn't here?" Steph said, feigning innocence.
I sighed. "He's not here because I didn't invite him. What I didn't tell them was I didn't invite him because I didn't think he'd come. Knox Morgan didn't seem like the type of man who would willingly show up at a kid's sporting event and make small talk for an hour. He was the kind of man who pinned you down and made you come in positions that shouldn't have been possible,
Like last night when he'd pressed me flat on my stomach and entered me from behind. My inner walls clenched involuntarily at the decadent memory.
Why didn't you invite him?
Sloane pressed, ignoring the game in favor of the sideline inquisition. I rolled my eyes.
I don't know. Probably because he wouldn't have come. And I don't want Waylay to get too used to him being around.
Naomi, I say this with love. This is the first time since high school Knox has dated anyone in town. That's huge. It means he sees something special about you that he hasn't seen in anyone else.
I felt like a fraud. I wasn't special. I hadn't landed a never-falling-in-love bachelor. I'd gotten swept up in an admittedly scorching hot one-night stand, and he'd gotten caught in the consequences of banging a good girl.
Is that Nash?
Steph asked, mercifully changing the subject. I looked up and spotted him ambling slowly in my direction. Sloane hummed.
Those Morgan brothers sure were built to catch the eye.
She wasn't wrong.
Nash Morgan looked every bit the wounded hero. I noticed quite a few of the moms and even one or two of the dads thinking the same thing. He was wearing worn jeans and a long-sleeved Henley. He had a baseball cap pulled down low, and I noticed he'd ditched the sling for his arm. He walked slowly, carefully. He looked casual, but I guessed the pace was dictated more by pain and exhaustion than by a desire to look cool.
"Morning," he said when he arrived.
"Hey," I said. "Want a seat?"
He shook his head, eyes on the field as the knockemouts played defense. Waylay glanced up and spotted him and waved. He waved with his good arm, but I saw the grimace under the smile. The man should be sitting at home resting and healing, not strolling around town without his sling. I realized my annoyance with his brother was spilling over onto Nash.
"Sit," I insisted, rising. I all but manhandled him into my chair.
"I don't need to sit, Naomi. I don't need to be at home resting. I need to be out here doing what I'm good at."
"And what's that?" I asked. "Looking like you got hit by a fleet of school buses?"
"Ouch," Steph said. "Better listen to her, Chief. She's mean when she's riled."
"I don't get riled," I scoffed.
"You should be riled, given the bomb that got dropped on you,"
Nash said.
Uh-oh.
"I changed my mind. You can stand up and walk away," I decided. He looked smug then.
"You didn't tell them."
"Tell us what?" Sloane and Steph said at the same time. "I didn't get a chance," I fibbed.
"Did you get a chance to tell your parents? Or Liza J, seeing as how she owns the property in question?"
"What's happening right now?" Sloane wondered. Steph's eyes narrowed.
"I think our close-mouthed little friend here is keeping more from us than just her exploits in bed."
"Oh, for Pete's sake," I huffed.
"Naomi didn't mention to you that Tina was connected to a break-in in town?"
Nash asked, knowing full well I hadn't.
"She most definitely didn't mention that."
"How about that, in order to commit the robbery, Tina broke into Naomi's cottage and stole one of her dresses?"
Sloane tilted her sunglasses down her nose to look at me. "Not cool, babe. Not cool at all."
"She pulled the old wrong twin again, didn't she?"
Steph asked, not looking at me. It wasn't a good sign.
"Look, I just found out about this."
"I told you 3 days ago, Naomi,"
Nash reminded me.
"I'm not real clear on the law in Virginia. Is it okay to put duct tape over a police officer's mouth?"
"Not when he's on the clock," Nash said with a grin.
"Why wouldn't you tell us? Why wouldn't you say something? If we need to be on the lookout for your sister, it's better if we know about it," Sloane pointed out.
"Let me explain something about our little witty here," Steph said to Sloane.
"And here we go," I muttered.
"See, Naomi doesn't like to inconvenience anyone by doing anything annoying like talking about what's wrong, asking for help, or standing up for what she needs and wants. She prefers to scurry around like a mouse, making sure everyone else's needs are met."
"Well, that's just fucked up," Sloane decided.
I winced.
Look, guys, I understand that you're concerned. I get it. I am too. But right now, my priority is to get custody of my niece. I don't have the time or the energy to worry about anything else. Your evil twin has been in your house that you share with her daughter, Sloane interjected.
She stole from you. She committed a crime disguised as you, so once again, you'd be the one to pay the consequences. And you didn't think it was worth mentioning?
Thanks a lot, Nash, I said. Sloane crossed her arms over her chest. Don't blame a man who just took 2 bullets, she said. Guys, don't you think you're overreacting?
No, we're reacting appropriately. You're the one who is underreacting. Your safety, Waylay's safety, is on the line. That deserves a reaction, Steph said.
I looked down at my hands.
So, it wouldn't make you all feel better that I am terrified, frozen in the core of my soul, fearful that something is going to happen and Waylay is going to be taken away from me, that some stranger is going to end up raising my niece, or worse, that my sister, the person I'm supposed to be closest to in this world, could come waltzing back into town and take her from me without me knowing, that between trying to prove to a caseworker who keeps seeing me at my worst that I'm the most responsible option she has, holding down 2 jobs, and reminding a little girl that not everything has to be the way it was for the first 11 years of her life, you want me to pencil in a conversation about how I have to exhaust myself just so I can sleep at night and not stare at the ceiling, thinking of all the ways this could go horribly wrong.
Yeah. That would make me feel better than being intentionally cut out, Sloane said.
Thank you. Steph said. Nash, you want to bring this home for us? Naomi, you've got a lot of people who care about you. Maybe it's time you let them take care instead of you doing all the caretaking for once.
I stuck out my chin. I'll take that under advisement, I said.
That's her snooty tone, Steph said. There's no getting through until she calms down.
I'm going for a walk, I said huffily. I hadn't made it very far when I heard,
Naomi, hold up.
I wanted to keep walking, to flip him the middle finger, but because I was me, I stopped in my tracks and waited for Nash to catch up.
I'm not doing this to piss you off, he said.
His eyes were bluer than Knox's, but they burned with that same Morgan intensity that had my stomach flipping upside down and inside out.
You need to be on the lookout. Your family needs to, too. Keeping shit like this from them is irresponsible, and that's the kind of thing that doesn't look good in guardianship cases.
You said I had nothing to worry about.
I'm speaking to you in a language you understand. Being a guardian, being a parent, it isn't about getting gold stars from some authority figure. It's about doing what's right, even when it's hard, especially when it's hard.
Easy for him to say. A caseworker hadn't caught him mostly naked after a one-night stand. He reached out and gripped my shoulder with one hand.
Do you hear me? He asked. I'd think real hard about removing that hand if I were you.
My head swiveled, and that's when I saw him. Knox, sauntering our way. But there was nothing casual about the look in his eyes. He looked pissed. Nash kept his hand where it was, even as Knox stepped into our little twosome. A second later, I found myself hauled up against Knox's side, his arm draped over my shoulder. Our audience was dividing its attention between the play on the field and the drama off it. I smiled like we were chit-chatting about butterflies and the weather. The brothers glared at each other.
I was just reminding your girl here that family takes care of family. Nash said. Now you're done reminding her. Why don't you get your ass back home and rest the fuck up so you're in shape to take care of family? I'm enjoying the game. Think I'll stick around, Nash said. Good to see you, Naomi.
I said nothing and watched him wander over to Liza and my parents. Neither of the Morgan brothers appeared to be in good moods in the mornings. What are you doing here? I asked, tilting my head back to look at Knox. His gaze was on the field, where Nina missed the ball entirely and instead connected with the shins of the opposing player.
Heard there was a game. Thought I'd swing by.
His thumb was rubbing lazy circles against my upper arm.
I felt a tingling that originated at the sight of his touch and traveled through the rest of my body. My grumpy, tattooed sort of boyfriend had dragged himself out of bed on an early Saturday morning after a closing shift at the bar, just to show up for me and Waylay. I wasn't sure what to do with that information. "It's early," I pointed out.
"Yep."
"Nash is just worried," I said, trying to move the conversation along.
"He does that."
The crowd noise picked up, and the game drew my attention. I felt Knox tense beside me as Waylay intercepted a pass and dribbled down the field.
"Go all the way, Way!" Wraith yelled. "Keep going, Waylay!" Dad shouted.
"Come on, kid,"
Knox said under his breath, his attention riveted on the number 6 jersey. My fingers curled into Knox's shirt as she closed in on the goal. Just as she reared her leg back to let the ball fly, another player ran into her and they both dropped to the ground. There was a collective groan from the fans. Nina and Chloe pulled Waylay to her feet, and I saw how red her face was.
"Uh-oh."
"Uh-oh what?"
Knox asked.
"What the shit, ref?" Waylay bellowed.
"Ah, crap,"
I whispered.
"Did she just say shit to the ref?"
Knox added. The referee blew the whistle and strode up to Waylay, digging in his front pocket. I groaned as the yellow card was produced and held up in front of my niece's mutinous little face. "Ugh, she does this every game. It's like she can't control her mouth," I groaned.
"Come on, ref," Wraith yelled. "That was a foul."
"Sorry, coach. Can't use that language on the field,"
the referee said. Waylay opened her mouth again. Thankfully, Chloe had the foresight to slap a hand over the gaping chasm of 4-letter words. Waylay fought against her,